Hi, it's Tony Bruschi from Real Ghost Stories Online, inviting you to subscribe to our other podcast called The Grave Talks. It's where I sit down and interview individuals who've had extreme paranormal situations happen to them in their lives. Just search The Grave Talks on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you download podcasts. Be sure to press subscribe and give us some stars to help spread the word that this show exists. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, exorcism. Nightmares, witchcraft, exorcism, and curses. Not exactly words anyone thinks of when describing a relationship. However, for Lee Moore, this is exactly what he dealt with when a woman he was dating wanted to end the relationship. Rather than a healthy breakup, Lee became the victim of a curse to drive him away. Dismissing this as an elaborate way to end the relationship, he thought nothing of it. Lee moved on and fell in love with a new wife. He began a new life, only to find that this curse was all too real and never left him. Subsequently, Lee experienced unexplained trauma and torture that nearly ended his life. With the help of spiritual warrior and exorcist couple Kenneth and Farrah Deal, Lee was able to banish the curse and these demons from his life. This is his story. Kenneth and Farrah Deal join us today to discuss exorcism.
If I start on that, Farrah, you might have to jump in and fill the details. Some of this stuff gets sketchy when it's his account.
I'm good at poking you.
Yeah, so we'll be like a tag team.
Well, just to let you know how we do things, you know, to set the tone for your listeners as well as yourself so that you can follow the timeline. When we get a call, we're usually handed off cases by reliable investigators, by the church, by pastors, by other people that know that we have the tools to get to the heart of the problem, and we recognize demonic footprints almost instantly because we work in the Office of Spiritual Warfare and Exorcism. And that's how this one started. This whole case was a handoff because somebody thought this is appearing dark. The elements are starting to be dark, and we're not sure we can deal with this. So Ken and I, when we handle an investigation, we usually do not need somebody's life story. We don't need the history of your house. We don't need to know, you know, the last four generations, whether they were Freemasons, whether they were Satanists. We need to know what has happened to you in the last 72 hours and how have you dealt with it, because the footprints will be there.
Yeah.
The footprints will be there. So we're almost like, you know, somebody walking very quietly through the woods, listening for the intruder. And that's how we deal with these things. So the case was peeling back the layers of an onion to find out the source, because we cannot attack the problem until we find the source. And this is how this case got so horrendously bad, was because the person that handed us the case didn't give us all the details.
Okay.
So then you can take it from there.
Yeah, and yeah, the back is eventually what we go to, but we can get so much out of it. We approach it like a police style interview, and I'm not saying this is detective, not police, because every, you know, there's a lot of people out there. I'm an ex-cop, so I'm qualified to be a demonologist. But if all that's not true, if you were an ex-detective, you would have that methodical thinking. And being an ex-cop just means you know how to file the paperwork. Mm-hmm. Ask the questions, you know, and just give them to a detective. You get the initial on-the-scene investigation stuff, which is not really an investigation. Oh, someone broke into the house at 3 a.m., and they got this little notebook. That's why I don't have a big one. They don't take pictures unless someone was murdered. So that's important to mention. So it's like the methodical thing of sometimes looking for what shouldn't be there first instead of the other way around, like Sherlock Holmes' method of deduction. He had a girlfriend, and apparently she didn't. He's a nice guy. She didn't know how to get rid of him. Isn't that terrible? Her girlfriend was a witch, and she says, I know how to get rid of him. And they did a spell on him to break it up. And so it goes back to that, because some things reveal themselves later, as you'll discover. The episode was originally called the Love Curse or Love Curse. I think it was just called Love Curse for those who wanted to look it up or, you know,
buy it. It's still available on YouTube. Yes, it's called Love Curse.
Yeah, whatever season, I can't even remember that part of it or not.
Well, Love Curse is pretty unusual, but it's very common too. So.
And this is where it gets sketchy because this part where he goes up and I realized he had this horrific dream. I don't remember the timeline for his story as well, unless I would watch the show again, which we haven't since it came out on DVD when they sent
us. We don't
watch
our shows anyway.
Yeah. So what can you fill on that part there? Because
I think the most important thing to think about, and as far as a timeline goes, is that for whatever reason, even though, you know, he knew that he was unwanted and that he found out that his girlfriend wanted to dump him, and his girlfriend's friend, a witch, had lit candles and set about casting spells so that, you know, he would dump her. That didn't really occur to him as to be a problem so much as other things that were currently going on. And that's how sometimes when we enter into a case, people are only seeing the periphery of 3 feet outside of them when actually it's about 12 feet away. And that's how we found out about this at a later time, was he had already had a curse placed on him. And as anyone working in spiritual warfare or demonology understands, that curse doesn't have to happen today. It doesn't have to happen next month. It could happen 5 months. It could happen 50 years from now. That's the interesting thing about demons. They don't have a timeline like we do. So when we tend to think that these supernatural beings do have a timeline, that's where we're limited and that's where we get stuck. So this thing that had basically manifested itself had its roots in this original curse and was not actually discovered until he was on death's door.
Yeah, so, more depth.
So at that point, was he aware, and I want to find out how he got to death's door, but did it take getting to that point to realize a curse had been placed on him, or did he find out that the ex-girlfriend did this in the course of the breakup?
It was actually in the course of the breakup, and he blew it off because, one, he's a good Christian man. Two, he doesn't believe in curses. And like most people that don't believe in voodoo, he kind of blew it off. He didn't think anything of it.
Okay.
And we didn't find out about this until, was it from his mother in the emergency room? Because it was not from the initial investigative group.
Yeah, he told us about the dream and that sort of thing, and I think things got revealed later on, but... Yeah, one of the things about this, like, okay, they sent a hitman, is the, you know, the girl, they do the ritual together. They sent a hitman to do a job. That's to get him away from her, to break him up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they do it by making him sick, really sick. Sometimes cancer shows up. That definitely takes you out of life or something. In this case, the job was done, but the demon was not ordered away. The curse wasn't broken. So he's hanging on there waiting for the perfect opportunity when he can maybe do more, even though the original... goal has already been accomplished. They just don't leave and come back like a hitman. Even a hitman's nicer than that. Mm-hmm. You know, so that they use one of his articles of clothing, and then he reveals it's a dream. It was like that he was, and there was some monstrous looking being in there, a demonic being, and that he was, you know, dealing with it, and one point or another, he slammed it outside the front of his house, and it stabbed him with a long sword through the door, through his gut. We call that like the point of entry. It's usually in, you know, an organ or something like that. And whenever these deliverances occur on a person, where it's oppression and possession, they might have a sign of departure a lot and double over in pain, where they remember getting that pain. It's 3 a.m. in the morning waking up. It's like they entered, and they don't enter like a giant body would. It could be a small, like, let's say a rodent burrowed its way in, you know, after a knife had, made an incision. So with that dream, I can't remember the details of the dream other than that I considered that was a point of entry. We focused on that, not really so much why, you know, like about this. But we noticed when we got called in by another investigator, we'll just say, who ended up being... that woman with the crystal wand, that he was having oppression, and the house was infested. So details on that, Farrah, is one that starts to get smoking. And that was right before we came there. It was already in progress. Some of them was just like the girl was pregnant. That's his wife. And then she was pregnant. She got shoved in the backyard. So when you got two people telling you the same story that are lining up and they talk in their
sleep. And neither one of them is taking any medication. Neither one of them have ever been admitted for psychiatric difficulties. Neither one of them have ever had hallucinations. They're both of sound mind, of sound reason. They both hold wonderful jobs. They're both, you know, they're a young couple in love. You know, they just got their house and they're living their life and they're telling you these things are going on. And for whatever reason, the investigator can't figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. Come to find out that, you know, when we get there, the so-called investigator had supposedly told him there was demons in the house and had bound a demon into the mirror in the back room. And there was another point of, shall we say, capture in a side building that this person said, well, you know, you've got another demon. I'm just going to take my magic wand and put it in there too. Well, we had to explain to the kids that if you are Christian, you cannot allow any kind of necromancy or magic on your property. And we had to try and dismiss, you know, this person and these activities and help them clear their house up. The activity stopped for a little while and then this person stops by again and says, well, I had a feeling when I drove by, I saw more things in your yard, so I stopped by to help you again. Boom, stuff starts happening. And this is when we have to come in and do a second round of cleanup and tell them that you can't open the door to these people. Mm-hmm. If somebody's insisting on crossing your threshold, it's going to be a problem because they keep, this is what we tell people, all right? When you go to the doctor and you have a virus, you have a bacterial bunch of stuff growing inside of you, you go and you get what? You get antibiotics. When you have hung out with witches, Satanists, necromancers, magicians, what happens? Their cockroaches jump on you, called little invitational demons. So you need anti-demonics. Now, either you take a couple days of anti-demonics and it gets worse because the demonics come back twice as bad, or you take your full course and you fight it off. If you need a second round, you take a second round. But if you don't take your anti-demonics, it's guaranteed that more cockroaches are going to be invited to the party and it will get worse. So these kids were so young and impressionable and so sweet, and they really did not want their sleep disturbed, the nightmares, the touching. It was literally not leaving their property.
Yeah, this an interesting note that wasn't even brought up in the original, and that's probably what some of the people would look for in an interview like this, is that, you know, he was on Lita's team, you know, the woman we were speaking of. He was on her paranormal team.
He was originally on the team, that's right, and they both quit, and she was mad.
Okay.
Yeah.
She was very
mad. So that didn't help, and that's part of it, too. And then so he ended up oppressed, almost possessed, where he lost consciousness a few times, but didn't get, you know, possession symptoms overall. But he could have been there. But we understand as it goes on, the story goes on, that this contributed to the whole thing by being in proximity to this woman. And working with, I don't think anybody else in the team was in that. It's hard to say on that because we didn't go any further when we found what we needed to do. But there were some things like the table rose up and it dropped. I don't know how high it rose up, maybe about 4 feet and just dropped on the ground. That's pretty abnormal activity. And when we were there, you know, shoving somebody over who's an adult, it takes a pretty good amount of force. It's not throwing them off balance, it's just shoving them over. So this is a more kind of a violent spirit instead of just the shadows, which they had, you know, the shadows at the corner of your eyes. You're standing there and you see a shadow go into the other room. And we spent an extra amount of time on that room. We went in the house to put up some holy water and so forth. And the part of that is what plays into a little bit when she I think she just became kind of, what do you call it, disgruntled a bit because we went over there. We didn't even do the yard yet. We did the house, and she kept doing this thing. She did it about 2 or 3 times, right, Fair, where she kept coming over.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the demons are here. And he said, hey, it's fine. I'm sleeping great. Everything's good. no, they're here. She comes in there with her little magic toolkit or whatever. She does it again, and they came back again. He says it's back. So we went over. We did the yard this time. And he said he saw a face looking at him in the window. And I said, okay, we'll get the yard too.
Mm-hmm. The seriousness of this case was that this girl was pregnant and unbaptized. That was deadly serious for her child.
I hope you enjoyed your 15-minute preview of our new podcast, The Grave Talks. Be sure to subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download podcasts to not miss any episode of the show. New episodes every single Monday. Just search for The Grave Talks and then press subscribe. Give us a review while you're at it and some stars that will help us grow in the rankings and let other folks know that the show exists to make an even better show for you. The Grave Talks. Check it out at thegravetalks.com.